Welcome to the Loki Podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for Loki, brought to you by Bald Move Pulp. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 1, Episode 3, titled Lamentous. Aaron, what do you think of this episode?
It's pretty good. I saw some people saying that nothing happened, but like, we found out a lot about our antagonist, and they developed quite a bit of character. And quite a bit of world building, and shows have to do that, and that counts as momentum, I thought. I thought this was pretty entertaining. I really liked the Lady Loki and their dynamic that they had. But yeah, I'm curious, because like obviously there's so many tricks going on here, mm-hmm. and there's so like we have two trickster gods that can fuck with your perceptions and your mind entirely. So it's like, what do you believe? You know, when someone whips out a pad, it's like, ah, oh, it's destroyed. Is it?
Yeah.
When someone goes to sleep and wakes up, did they? I don't know. So like, I think next episode is going to be a real freaking doozy before we probably get back to the whatever the TVA is doing in this time. But I really liked it. What'd you think?
Yeah, you're probably right about quite a bit of that. And I think everybody's going to have their theories coming out of this episode because it just encourages you to spin some off. I was pretty disappointed by this episode, honestly. I like those first two episodes, and I thought we were gearing up to kind of push it to the next level here. And we were going to learn more about the other Loki variants plan, Sylvie's plan. I guess I expected this to continue the story more directly than it did. And we kind of were left with a Mandalorian style side quest episode that, yes, there are tricks going on, but they don't reveal anything in this episode. It's probably this episode and the next one. I don't know. Maybe the rest of the season need to be taken as a pair. And it will feel better once they get this next episode out. But as it stands, yeah, this episode was pretty disappointing to me. There was also some weird tonal stuff between the two Lokis here, or not Loki and Loki. They are like at each other's throats the whole time at the beginning of this episode, and then they just sit down in this lounge and sort of everything turns on a dime, and now they're suddenly, you know, working together and having this like flirty, strange, like half I don't know, like it just didn't feel right. Nothing in that scene felt right to me. I don't know how to describe it. It's just, it turned too fast.
You can't wrap your mind around Loki sexualism, you know. If you've never been Loki attracted, it's hard to understand what it feel like to meet, you know, yourself and just like have that instant, you know.
Oh yeah, people are saying there are fireworks in this episode. I didn't see them. I couldn't see them.
They were coming from Loki's fingertips. I mean, how could you
not?
No,
I didn't see anything. I just saw him wiggling his fingertips. Yeah, so I don't know, disappointing episode, but like I said, I think once the next episode comes out and we see what the subterfuge is here, because you know it's there, it has to be there, and you know, if it's not there, I'm gonna be doubly disappointed, but I think it is. And
this is definitely one of them, their peace moving episodes we used to talk about in Breaking Bad, where it's like, you know, to get to the next awesome thing, you have to kind of like have some talky scenes and get some people moved around. I think we're going to see there. I since we're bitching about things, I will say this, and we got some feedback on it too. I talked about how I thought the volume were starting to show the seams. And like the magic was like, I felt like I was sitting, you know, I was watching someone doing close up magic and I was standing where I wasn't supposed to be. So I'm mm-hmm. like, well, you're not fucking levitating. You're just standing on your tippy toe.
Yeah.
The wheels really kind of fell off in this episode. It seems like the volume being a fixed volume has a real hard time showing wide vistas that characters are traversing. Because it's a finite space and you're supposed and the thing they're supposed to be in, and like the framing and how close things were, and like it just really looked like kind of bad rear projection in a way that I never really thought of it in The Mandalorian. I definitely, when I realized what they're doing, I could tell like, oh yeah, this is a volume space. But I thought Loki kind of broke the fourth wall a bit with the green screen literally like rolled up behind him or something a time or two. But I think, yeah, I'll talk about more of that in the feedback, because I don't know that that's like a huge drastic problem, because like, you know, think about CG in the early 2000s and how cover your eyes bad that looks, you know, a lot of places. Some places it still looks pretty spiffy, like Lord of the Rings. The people that really pioneered did it right, but then other people got their hands on that technology and did not, you know, and I think that's the case of what's going on here. So, okay, well, let's take a quick break and then get right into the episode.
All right, we start off with Lady Loki, who I'm going to call Lady Loki until she tells us her name. Tries to trick C20 into revealing how many people are guarding the timekeepers with a margarita brain freeze. It's not successful, but she does manage to find out what the elevator that leads to them looks like.
Yeah, I thought this was a really effective scene because it took me a while to figure out what the fuck was going on. Because I guess I didn't really recognize either C20 or Lady Loki. They're kind of, you know,
Really? You didn't recognize Lady Loki?
I
can see C20 because she's under the helmet and all that, but...
she's got the headdress and she's got the cloak, and when they're in Pina Colada, Jimmy Buffett mode, I just didn't get it. And then once you became aware of what was happening, and here's where it's like, I think a lot of development as far as the TVA, like we wondered about like, why are these people all people? And, you know, what is like, were they created? Are they constructs? Are they this? Are they that? Why, you know, why is this one guy obsessed with jet skis? I think we're starting to figure out that, you know, what this Lady Loki enchanting is telling us is that these are variants, humans that have been hijacked into the system, the Matrix style, and are unwittingly participating in this thing, which is like, again, another little brick in the whole TVA is probably evil wall that we're building here. Mm-hmm. But I liked it. It's fun. Like, it's like completely took over the Marvel intro. You know, you got this like fun beach music and party, and I'm like, what the hell is going on with this? I thought this was a good scene, and showing how finesse, you know, because we later will hear her describe this process, but how much it takes to finesse information out of people when you're doing this enchanting.
Yeah,
especially if you're dealing with a strong mind.
It's hilarious to me, though. Like the trick itself is pretty unsophisticated, aside from like the scenery, right? Like, OK, you change the scenery, you make them think they're in a location, you make them think they're your friend. But then you just straight up ask him how many people are guarding the timekeepers. And you but do that like over and over. How many people are guarding the timekeepers? Where's the elevator? Yeah. All that shit. I'm like, okay. There was no like slyer way to ask this question other than straight up.
It felt a lot like strategy to use. I imagine like, you know, with the MK Ultra, when like you had CIA agents in, you know, trying to extract information from people they pumped full of LSD. Like, and you're just like the subject, and you're intensely looping on some kind of hallucinogen. And then like every once in a while, you'll kind of come to and this, you'll realize that you're being interrogated and the spell's broken. Then it has to be. I felt as more like that rather than you're literally supposed to understand that she's like, oh, are we comfy in her fantasy? Where, what is the disposition of the forces of the, you know, it's like, but I thought it worked. And the way it like suddenly kept the person off balance, because like the day would change or the time of day. It's like a Greg Nicotero directed episode of Loki. I thought that stuff was good. I thought it was pretty cool.
All right. Next scene, we head over to the TVA. Lady Loki teleports there. Loki follows her. She tries her mind powers, but they don't work here. And she goes to the gold elevator, which is what, you know, C20 told her, and tries to enter, but Ravonna shows up and, Loki decides, oh, we got to get out of here, and teleports him away using the Tim pad. Do you want to talk about this? This is mostly action stuff, I figure.
Right. I just like we wondered what the hell was she was doing last episode with the hundreds of time capsules going, the reset capsules going this, there, and the other. Clearly, this was all just a distraction to purge the TVA of personnel so she could go and traipse through it. And it was carefully, meticulously planned, because like she had just enough juice to pull this off, the disperse all the stuff, pull this off, and escape. So like it kind of gives you an idea, like later when she says this was a plan years in the making, like we kind of give a short shrift, but like, yeah, Loki Loki Prime here really fucked her in whatever she was trying to do.
Yeah. So like you said, the Tempad is out of juice, stranding them on Lamentus One in the year 2077, which turns out is during an apocalypse that destroys the entire moon that they're on when a planet crashes into it. And they argue for a little while, run from falling meteorites into a shack where they agree to work together to recharge the Tempad.
Yeah, I like a good moon crashing into a planet story. Like the old Guy Pearce time traveler, time machine. Like I like that. I like the, isn't that the way Chewbacca non-canonically died in the Star Wars Legends? A moon crash like from the Yuuzhan Vong manipulating gravity crashed on him.
It's a
neat sci-fi idea. Like the idea of like this moon that's always hanging in her sky is kind of like this comforting presence is like suddenly coming to kill you. It's neat. It's an exciting kind of apocalyptic event to happen.
Yeah, I agree. The effects of that are pretty devastating even before the celestial body crashes into you. I read a book. Shit. I can't think of the name of it. Something Saturn. God damn it. It was a really good book about the moon breaking up, our moon here on Earth, breaking apart for no reason. It's like one of those unexplained events and then like falling to Earth and the after effects of that. And it spans like multiple generations of humans. And it's got like a ring world style time span thing. That was really cool. So, yeah, I'm a fan of that stuff, too. Here it's all just playing out in fast motion. They have a pretty good joke in this scene that's just played totally straight, where they're like trying to talk about, oh, you know, the Tempad's out of juice, and then Lady Loki is like, there's power somewhere here on this moon. We just need to find enough of it to travel through interdimensional time and space. It's like, oh, okay, no problem. What's that take? Like 2 AA's, 3?
Right.
Enough to power apparently, a Game Gear, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, apparently a star interstellar arc is the power source you need to... and that makes sense. And this is honestly just a MacGuffin, a reason for these two people that hate each other to have to work together or else they're going to face certain death.
Yeah.
You know, that Loki triggered. She has a whole encyclopedia, apparently, in this time pad of these apocalyptic things to hide out on, and he picked this one and they're out of juice, and if they don't work together, they're gonna die.
You gotta imagine, and maybe we can start talking about some of the things that lead us to believe this is some kind of trick, because we're dealing with two trickster gods here. The first thing is you gotta remember that Loki has kind of perused the apocalypse files, right? The doomsday catalog is now firmly planted in his brain. He knows when he says, I don't know what Lamentus One means. I think that's a lie. I think he knows exactly what Lamentus One means.
Yeah. And he brought them there because it has some kind of perceived advantage for him.
Right.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that for sure. Because it's also kind of in the, isn't this broadly speaking around the time frame they're looking like in the mid 21st century?
Yeah, it's close. It's like 20 years off. I can't remember the exact date. It was like 2045 to 2050 or something like that.
Oh, okay. So maybe not. But I think that's plausible. I think that's certainly plausible.
Yeah, and there is a lot of other reasons to think there's something fishy going on.
I also
here.
Like the idea that like this Loki thinks he's uniquely like was he called a tech savvy or tech literate? Like give it to me. I'm a tech savvy Loki. Like,
yeah. I hooked up my dad's VCR. Odin, yeah, he couldn't figure that shit out. I did it in like Odin, 2 minutes.
He couldn't figure out the interdimensional cable, couldn't program the shit to record. I got that thing, boom, yeah. Set up a cell phone. Yeah, yeah.
So they go searching for a power source, and Lady Loki tells Loki that her name is Sylvie now. They find a settlement where Sylvie tries and fails to trick Loki into handing over the Tempad. So they continue on, and they find this house occupied by a cantankerous old woman, who they have a little bit of trouble interacting with, but eventually she tells them that there's an arc set to take off and get everyone off the planet. And they think that arc might have enough power to recharge the Tempad, so they head there.
This is a joke that I saw coming a mile away, but it was still fun to watch. Loki's confidently striding up and impersonating the her sweetheart in a picture. And I'm like, I know how this is going to go. She's going to blow him the fuck off that porch. But it was still fun to watch the wind up, the pitch, and the grand slam.
Yeah, I did enjoy the back and forth in this episode of, you know, the power dynamics like shifting and their attitudes towards each other shifting. That was pretty good.
Especially since like there's like Loki seems aghast. Like, is she ahead of him on the hero curve? Because it's like, I can't believe Loki is going to create a power vacuum and just walk like the ultimate power vacuum and not exploit it, but just to walk away. I wonder, because I don't think she's evil. And I think the time the TVA is so, you know, he's essentially can't understand a purely altruistic thing, a purely altruistic gesture.
Yeah, could be that. Or it could be that he doesn't understand the full extent of the plan. Because I think that's part of what, if there is a subterfuge here going on with Loki trying to trick her into something, it's probably trying to trick her into getting the details of the plan, right?
Right.
So he wouldn't fully understand what she's planning to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We'll see. Next up, they arrive at what I thought was the Ark. Turns out it's just the train to the Ark. Loki comes up with a plan to transform into a guard and leads Sylvie onto the Ark. Another guard tries to stop him, but Sylvie enchants him, and then they board. And man, this whole thing, we talked about this a little bit before the podcast with the volume, and maybe we're going to save that part of it till later. But this whole planet looks to me like they got their Star Wars in my Marvel with like, this could be Tatooine if it wasn't purple, if the sky wasn't purple.
Right.
And if the, you know, huts were made of a little less metal. I don't know. It felt very Star Wars planet to me.
Well, okay. So I have a bit of a problem. Are these humans? Is this a human future colony? I don't think we're going to get there in 50 years, but I don't know. Maybe Elon will get it done. I don't understand, because like usually Marvel's pretty good at having alien ass aliens.
Yeah.
You know, even when they're just like palette shifted, like Drax and Gamora, they're like recognizably like, it feels weird to have them. And it feels very Star Wars, to be honest, to have them just trot out like an alien, a human colony.
Yeah, that's definitely part of what made it feel Star Wars.
And I know that there's a couple, like even in Guardians of the Galaxy, the whatever the police force was kind of like, you know, pretty recognizably human. I feel like that they, with the budgets they've got, they need to be a little bit more alien on this stuff, because it's like, you know, unless they're intending that there is a human colony. And I don't know, maybe that's the thing, is like, Marvel Universe in 2021 has got fucking holographic shielded fucking helicarriers, so maybe we are going to get interstellar travel. But I guess I wish they would be a little bit more intentional about that, because it felt to me like a budget issue that they just don't have the enough foam latex to outfit people to do this.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? This project is super ambitious. I mean, creating a 6-episode series, you know, it's like the budget of a movie probably, that is, you know, 6 times as long or 3 times as long.
Yeah.
And still trying to do all of the Marvel shit with crazy worlds and aliens and ships and powers and all that stuff. It's a lot of effects work that they're trying to do on what has to be a slimmed down budget. So,
yeah, but I do think that if I understand the upcoming phases, they're going to need to introduce some alien species to kind of like round out the cast of characters. And I feel like these are missed opportunities to do that, to where like you can get your first encounter with the Shi'ar Empire, you know, outpost. They can just kind of like get it going in people's mind. And instead you just got stock humans wearing, you know, like you said, moisture farmer outfits or kind of like fashy RoboCop OCP outfits on the other side. It's like, I don't know. I guess that also is like, the two Lokis are recognizably human, so maybe haven't. But then again, they also can fucking change a shape at will. So what the shit?
Those guard uniforms, are the helmets on those designed specifically to wear in the volume? Because they're very reflective. They're all just like one sheet of black acrylic or whatever.
Interesting. I mean, it's a, if I mean, because that's the one powerful thing of the volume, right, is that like what you see is what you get. Like those reflections and shit are real. So like, yeah. Why not? Unfortunately, it's not. I don't think this is the best showcase episode. If they're trying to be like, look at our reflective surfaces. I'm like, yeah, look at the fucking seam in the floor, you know?
Mm-hmm. So then Sylvie and Loki sit and talk in the lounge on the train to the Ark. Sylvie asks about Loki's mother, and Loki gets sort of caught up in this conversation. They talk about their mothers, their magic, and love, and then agree to relax in their own ways. The first thing I noticed here that felt totally off is the number of people outside the train versus the number of people inside the train, and the look of the people outside versus the look of the people inside. These were not the moisture farmers getting on this train. Nope. These were the elites.
These are the well-moisturized, relaxed elites that have farmed the moisture from the moisture farmers. And it's, and that's the thing. It's like, I remember talking about this in The Mandalorian. Like, I don't understand this weird social commentary that they're doing, like, without actually ever addressing it. Maybe they will. And maybe we're supposed to understand, because later in the episode, Loki will, not quite in an outraged voice, more of a kind of like remarking on the fact of like, oh, they're just leaving these people to die. There's a couple of those kind of moral quandaries in Mandalorian where like they'd raise like, oh, look at this oppressed people in the Imperials. And it, I guess it works a little bit better as an LOL, who cares, when you're dealing with like ruthless bounty hunters. But I don't know, like these are heroes or anti-heroes. And I guess that stuff should bother them if they're, but maybe they're also telling that like Loki at this level's development just doesn't care. And I guess why would he? He was about ready. This Loki, again, is about ready to enslave the entire Earth.
Uh-huh.
So, but like, again, what the hell is this? You know, you keep showing this dynamic, but you're not really doing anything with it or addressing it. But I also want to say, because you seem to really be bothered about why they would kind of be at peace in this lounge. I don't know what they're supposed to do. Are they supposed to have a big cinematic Loki fight in the middle of this train that they're trying to like hide out on to get to?
No, but emotional talks about their mothers and their childhoods, like that stuff just kind of came out of nowhere for me. It was like one minute they are fighting, one minute they are knives to each other's throats, and the next minute they're talking about the meaning of the relationship they had with their mothers.
It feels just like Quint and Robert Dreyfuss, who they're kind of antagonistic characters in Jaws, but they're stuck in a long scene. So they just start swapping essentially emotional war stories, I guess, is what they're doing here. I mean, I know why Loki's doing it, because he wants her to talk.
Right.
And if he can keep her talking, then he can get information. And she is letting, I know why Lady Loki's doing it, because in trying to get her to talk, Loki's talking a lot and giving her information about who he is and what makes him tick. So like, I felt like it made sense.
I guess so. I wish that this episode wasn't so short, I guess, is this episode is way shorter than the other two episodes. And I kind of felt like they cliffhangered it for the sake of cliffhangering it, instead of like making the episode kind of stand alone as something that was interesting. Because like all this stuff is going to be revealed next episode, most likely. It's just within this episode, none of it pays off, right? There isn't ever like a plan to trick the other person. There isn't, none of that is revealed. And so it feels very weird.
All right. I can see that. Did you have any, I tried to look into, because I thought this is an obvious Easter egg when they're talking about their lovers. First of all, I guess this will probably be big news. I haven't seen people talk about it much, but like, you know, we went from like Endgame having Marvel's first LGBT character, which is essentially a guy who talked about dating a cute boy in an emotional support group post snap led by Captain America. And people are like, yay, representation. But like, I think Loki just canonically came out as bisexual, or at least bi Loki. No, he confessed to having like his share of princes and princesses, which I think is kind of a big deal.
You're not hearing people talk about this? It's like every other comment on the Reddit thread. I don't know.
Okay, I guess I was focused on the lore stuff. And again, I was doing my notes like at 9:30 in the morning. So like maybe you came in and the conversation was more developed. But yeah, I thought this obviously people make a big deal, because like this is the biggest LGBT character in Disney history now, single-handedly, just with an offhanded comment.
Probably cinematic history with as big as Marvel is. I mean,
could be, yeah, if you're talking about just like in terms of billions of dollars at the box office
and number of people who are invested in it. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no, I thought that was interesting.
It's kind of casually played off here. I wonder if they're going to do more with that in the future.
Yeah, I also was really curious about, because this is obviously supposed to be an Easter egg, but when Sylvie's talking about having a relationship with this postman,
Kevin Costner, the postman, the apocalyptic postman.
I don't think so. I saw okay. that, like, I saw a couple of things, suggestions of what this could be. You know, there is, I guess, this leader of this band of Morlocks, who's kind of like a villain in the deep cut of X-Men's Rogues Gallery. There's this guy named Willie Lumpkin, who I guess delivered mail to the Fantastic Four and dated Aunt May, Peter Parker. And also, I think this guy that was played by Stan Lee as a cameo and won the Fantastic Four. And it also could be kind of like a sneaky allusion to all of like Stan Lee's multiverse appearances in the MCU entirely. Like she like lists the Lady Loki's got a torrid relationship with Stan, with essentially the time and cosmos traveling Stan Lee. I like that one the best, but like, I don't know. I'm interested to see like what this Morlock sort of Willie Lumpkin stuff shakes out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of discussion about also who Sylvie is, which when do you want to talk about that? Because
let's talk about that, because I didn't see as much great theories about that. I guess like I was kind of running down something about the Enchantress.
Yeah, and I didn't have time to research this. Pretty much at all. But yeah, that seems like and Marvel, look, the backstory on this shit gets real confusing immediately. You open up the Wikipedia mm-hmm. article and there are two different characters who were called the Enchantress, and one of them was, I guess, a teenager who was given powers by Loki. So people, and her name is Sylvie, so I think a lot of people are assuming that that's what this character is.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And she doesn't want to be called a Loki. Could be some like, you know, teenage angst going on there for sure. Yeah, I don't know too much about it, but I'm sure you can go out there and look for like Loki episode 3 Enchantress, and you'll probably find a lot of info at this point.
Yeah. And they do a lot of Marvel's good at doing that. Like they take the essence of a character and like give it a different, slightly different origin. Mm-hmm. So that it kind of makes sense with all the other interconnected stuff. And Marvel's a great thing to do that, because they got so many different potential continuities and versions of characters and alternate histories and, you know, what ifs and different universes that you can kind of mix and match. So like this, like the Enchantress wasn't given her powers, but she's literally like Loki in some actual kind of like post-Earth. And again, all this stuff, like it seems like it's, well, this is going to be a problem, because how do these people all exist post-TVA? But I think the TVA is going to get smashed. So like these are just the birth. We're watching the birth of new characters. Yeah. And I got a couple of theories of my own to talk about towards the end of this episode.
OK, well, let's keep moving then. Sylvie wakes up. Loki's singing and dancing with all of the ARC occupants or train occupants. Someone doesn't like his look and leaves the car. Sylvie notices that and warns Loki, but he's too full to care much. Full is how he describes being drunk, I guess. The guards enter the room and ask for their tickets. A fight ensues. Loki's thrown from the train and Sylvie follows him. The Tempad is destroyed in the process, and they come up with a last ditch plan to hijack the doomed Ark and fly it off the moon. And they begin walking toward the Ark.
I got something on this Loki saying that he's drunk as full. Jack from Norway wrote in and said, I noticed a funny tidbit in episode 3 that I found quite charming. When Sylvie refers to or wakes up on the train to find a singing Loki, she remarks that you're drunk, to which he replies, no, I'm just full. It's funny to me, as full as the Norwegian word for drunk, as in Jaeger full. I am drunk is what that literally means.
Hmm.
I'm not sure if there's initial joke or not by the writers, but given Loki's roots in Norse Norwegian mythology, I thought it was quite fitting for the trickster god with the gift of gab to make such a pun.
Yeah, that's cool.
I love that. I it's got to be intentional, right? If you're doing, like, you know, Norwegian lore work and Norse god stuff, to like throw in a, like, a little verbal interplay like that.
Can Loki get drunk, or does he just,
you know, I mean,
drink and have Thor fun can. With people while they get drunk?
I think Thor, I don't can. Know. Like, seems like the Norse gods can fucking now. Okay. Whether, like, is it like one of those things where they can get drunk and then instantly dispel, like instantly sober up using their god powers? Maybe, but right. Like, I think Loki's gotten smashed in a Marvel film or three.
Yeah, I can't remember. He probably has.
Did I say Thor or Loki? Yeah, Thor is the guy that, like, is like, yeah, another. And also, I liked it, yeah, like, because, like, great. Thor does a lot of that Peter the Great style huzzahing in the Marvel films, and Loki, his brother's doing it. Why, he's singing an Asgardian sea shanty.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was very cute. Mm-hmm. Something also potentially cute. Everything that happens after Sylvie wakes up is an illusion or a trick. Or Loki pulling a reverse enchantment on her.
Yeah. That's also a likelihood.
Yeah. Anytime I'm seeing a break in consciousness of these characters, there's a potential continent. There's an alternate thing being pulled. Some alternate wool being pulled over their prime timeline eyes, I think.
I mean, there has to be, right? Okay, so at the end of this episode, they're clearly doomed, like all the way doomed. There's no way of getting off of this planet. Their tempad is totally destroyed. So either an outside force has to come in and save them, which I don't see happening. I don't know. Maybe Owen Wilson tracks them down here and comes and saves them. I doubt it. What I think is far more likely is that they have never been doomed. And in fact, this is either a trick that starts here or a trick of Loki pretending that the tempad is destroyed when in actuality he's got it. It's fully charged. There's always been an immediate way off this planet.
Yeah, that's 100% locked. There's no way that tempad is destroyed. And I'm to the extent that I'm kind of in disbelief that Lady Loki or Sylvie doesn't understand. But I'm kind of thinking that's the thing. It's like, it's one of those who's conning who, like a Rick and Morty style. You know, you thought that I was planning this. Well, I was planning this. Well, you thought that I thought that you were planning this. Well, all along I was planning. It's like, who's going to be the last one to subvert whose plans?
Yeah.
I thought that's something that they're definitely going for. And also, when they're talking about the nature of love and all that stuff, did you think this might be a little bit of commentary on what everyone thought was kind of like a subpar observation by Vision about, like, what is grief but love persevering? That, like, Loki's trying to say something profound about love and he's kind of drunk and fucking it up. And
was there anything in, like, the Winter Soldier, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, that was like, love is like a round shield or something?
I don't think so.
What is love if not the star on my shield or something? It's like, I'm just thinking, are they going to do this in every series that they put out?
I can see that, because, like, again, with the Rick and Morty, like, that's pretty self-referential and meta and, like, self-making fun. Like, I could see from that background it being almost irresistible to, like, hey, let's just shoot a pickup scene of Loki saying something stupid about love.
Yeah, we'll see. Why couldn't he conjure those tickets? Was he too drunk or too full?
I think, again, yeah, that's what I'm. But that's the thing, is like, that's why none of this is real, because even this Loki isn't so stupid that he's going to lose his uniform, get so drunk he loses his uniform and causes a big scene and gets him thrown out of the train when, like, death is on the line.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, yeah, like, I don't buy any of this stuff. And I don't even buy that Sylvia's taken in by it either. That's what I'm saying. Like, next episode should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think if she's not taken in by it, then, or if she is, let's just say, Loki's probably using the fact that she thinks very little of him and would believe that he's such a buffoon that he would accidentally destroy this thing. And then, like, pretend like everything's fine because he's got it right. He's techno savvy.
Right.
Yeah. Just playing both his ego and her perceived incompetence of him to try and trick her. It could be that simple, or it could be way deeper, which I hope it is.
Yeah, plus, I'm thinking it could be like one of those Inception things where, like, because there's another popular theory that said, like, when Loki, like, popped behind her back and transformed into the goofy purple stormtrooper, that's when he, like, made himself invisible and made an illusion of himself. But like, I like the idea of like a scene in the future where she's enchanting him and like in his headspace, but then he reveals that, you just enchanted an illusion and I'm the real Loki all the time. And then the scene shifts again and she's got her fingers on his head. Like, they're just like, you know, it's like, how many levels deep do they go until they're in limbo of right. illusion and enchanting and illusion? It's like, I think it'll be a lot of fun. Contrapoint. We get the next episode and none of this stuff matters. I think I see what you're saying was like, this is going to like, the wheels will kind of fall off because like everyone's expecting some maximum clever shit here.
Well, and they've set it up, right? Like whatever is going to happen with the subterfuge is already set up. They've already told you the rules. Yeah. They've had characters say it, right? Like there are several times where either if you're talking about Loki in previous episodes, or you're talking about Sylvie in this episode saying, okay, here's exactly how enchanting works. They have already set this up, and it's just the fact that maybe they've hit it well enough that we can't quite figure out exactly how it works yet.
Yeah. But I also want to talk about like the two Lokis wreck and shop. Like, I like the fact that on all of these Marvel shows, they don't really skimp out on the fight scenes, because I've seen a lot of action shows that where it gets to be perfunctory because it's like, well, it's not like once you've seen so many great fights, how do you top it? And then it's like, well, you know, you got to have a fight here because these people would fight, but it's nothing special to write home about. Like they're doing like this is all really good stunt work, even when it does. Mm-hmm. And we haven't even talked about it, like the whole TVA battle where she's like purging people left and right and jumping on walls and stuff like that. Stuff is, you know, really slick and, you know, as good as anything I've ever seen. And they know that we probably a lot of people aren't going to like talk about it. We will let them know when they phone it in.
Like
I like that commitment that, like, you know, just like you can't just stop acting in the middle of a scene just because it's been a long conversation. Mm-hmm. You still got to do the voice and the face and all that shit. Same thing with stunts, man. Even if it's like kind of a perform, you got to commit to it. And the MCU stunt team is delivering.
Yeah, they probably wouldn't have the biggest media franchise on the planet if they didn't.
True.
They just like let some of these things slide. So they walk and talk on their way back to the city. Loki gets Sylvie to open up about how enchantment works. She also talks about C20 and how there was a time when she didn't work for the TVA, which shocks Loki, but it doesn't shock him as much as when she tells him that everyone who works for the TVA is a variant just like them. And then they hustle up to the city where they hear a final boarding call for the Ark.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, like, you know, Mobius. Did he used to sell jet skis? Yeah. Did he used to be a big jet ski enthusiast? Certainly
he owned and or operated jet skis in his human past.
Like, what happens when these people, like, can they be reset an infinite amount of time? Like, how many times has Mobius realized, wait a second, I used to be an Earthling. This is a shocking thing. And they reset him. Mm-hmm. Like, I just wonder, like, how much they'll delve into kind of like in the same way that, you know, it's kind of, when Wanda like ensorcellates an entire town, it's like just a horror of that. Like, and they, I thought they did a good job of every once in a while that townsperson's focus would snap and they talk about how like just truly hellish it is.
Yeah.
I wonder if we'll have some similar things with Owen Wilson where it's like, it's just like kind of, he's just like happy go lucky Owen Wilson, but like we'll get a little bit of sadness because this isn't the person he's supposed to be. He's just been enslaved to the system. Again, TVA is evil, bunch of assholes, lock stock for sure.
Yeah. I wonder, do we need to sort of focus up our hatred of the TVA? Is it timekeepers? Is it because the TVA, if you're apparently right, they're TVA. All enslaved with mind control, you can't say that they're evil, but the timekeepers could be evil. Ravonna might be evil. I don't know.
By rules of Star Trek, when someone's possessed and not acting of their own free will, and I guess by rules of The Conjuring 3, the devil made me do it. If you're being possessed by an outside folk, if you're just being puppeted, then like how could you possibly have any moral culpability?
The lizard people made me do it.
Yeah. So the timekeepers are evil. And here's the thing. I don't even think the timekeepers are a thing. I think the timekeepers are the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
And there is some person behind the curtain pulling the strings. And that's the interesting thing that's going to be.
Is it this Kang that we talked about last episode? Is that the thing?
We're We're going to talk. I mean, okay. Do you want to get to the end of the episode?
Let's do this, because it's all pretty much just action from here. There are 5 minutes left until launch. They concoct a quick plan to get onto the Ark as conditions on the moon get worse. And then the Ark is destroyed before they can make it aboard. And, you know, Loki has his big pose at the end.
Yeah.
The thing that bothered me most in this scene is guards who are on a doomed planet that's actively ripping itself apart and being bombarded by meteorites or whatever are trying to stop two schmoes who are just running around in the outskirts of this Ark area. That's what bothered me. Like, did these people have no sense of self-preservation? Are they so devoted to the cause of keeping the plebes off the Ark that they're willing to throw their own lives away in the final moments?
I think it's explicit. This is like a situation like in the one of the seasons of The Expanse where, like, this is the last transport off of a doomed asteroid and everyone wants on it. And you've got three or four people that are muscle that are keeping the crowd at bay. And it's the implicit understanding that they're going to be the last ones on there. Now, whether they act, but I think that's why the stormtroopers so are loyal.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but like, is it going to, like, when is it going to leave? Like, I'm like, if they have, like,
they said it.
Yeah. So they got 5 minutes to get back to their post, or I don't know. Like, I don't think they're fanatic, because, like, the thing is the reason I say that is because when the transports gets destroyed, the Ark gets destroyed, like, several of the guards, like, fall to their knees and, like, fuck. So I think they expected to get onto that, you know.
I guess they should have staged this fight a lot closer to the Ark then, like right outside the Ark, because it feels like they are miles from the Ark. If this thing is as big as it looks, they're a good 5 minute walk easy from the Ark. They're not making it.
And I wonder if this was some of those volume limitations, like they just couldn't, like if they just couldn't stage it because it just didn't look right. Because one of the things I think that they need to do is like, And I think this is how the volume works, is that these are like rear projected surfaces. If they could get those into be like OLED, because I think the one thing that really gives it away is like you can tell that, I don't know, that this is a screen that's being projected. It's a little bit washed out. Mm-hmm. And if they could get it to where it's like as vivid as like, you know, or something real that's reflecting light and stuff, I think that's one thing that would help them. But I wonder if like I wonder if it's just the volume, if they just couldn't get the. Because part of making a volume work is blending real shit, like elements of the train station and like stuff on the ground. Yeah. And like if you got a hangar bay that you can like frame in action, or a starship strut with a wing that kind of like gives you a little separation of foreground, midground and background, it works a hell of a lot better. But here they're just in a big valley with a starship in the background. And I wonder if it was close, like just a parallax wouldn't work, like as the camera traversing, like. It's just not going to look right.
I did see some weird stuff when they were doing close-ups of Loki in the lounge when he was singing. There was like some distortions in the background.
I thought you were going to talk about like this fight scene, because there was a lot of...
Oh, no. People were complaining about the planet that's crashing into it looking really shitty, and I didn't really see that.
Yeah. I them walking around and them at this final fight is where I saw most of the kind of... volumetric problems, but
gotcha.
Yeah. Also, like I mentioned earlier in the episode, I thought it was interesting Loki's line reading of like they're going to let these people die. It was halfway between like an offhand observation of fact and like outrage, and I thought that was interesting. Like this is Loki is starting to be bothered by this shit happening, but maybe not quite all the way there yet, or maybe I'm just I don't know. Maybe Tom was just phoning it in and it came across that way, but I don't know. He's a pretty good actor.
Who's he's talking about here? Is he maybe talking about the TVA too? Because like that's the thing about the TVA. They know that everything is going to happen and they do nothing to stop it.
And
it's supposed
to happen. Yeah.
They prune it and make it happen. So yeah, I don't know.
I'm sure if they were a good organization, there's probably a lot of needs of the many outweighing needs of the few kind of thing they can cloak that with.
A lot of rhetoric, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of empty rhetoric for the people who are going to survive to the people who are going to die. Yeah.
So that's the end of the episode. We'll see how the tricks are played out next episode, because there've got to be tricks here, for sure. Just what are they?
Yeah. And I wonder, because like that's the thing, is like the one flaw in my Loki might have enchanted Sylvie flaw is that she doesn't explain the process until after she falls asleep and wakes up. But it's still plenty of room for just pure illusion. And also,
yeah,
she taught herself to trick, which I always think if someone did that, then someone else who's already steeped in magic might be able to figure it out themselves, too. It's like,
yeah,
they gave you the key to the lock as they handed it to you. So, but
right. It's like if Luke had walked over to Yoda on Dagobah and said, look what I learned to do, and lifts a rock. Yoda's like, oh, that's a neat trick, and lifts the X-Wing. You know, like I've been doing magic a lot longer than you, buddy.
Yeah. So like there's a new wrinkle that you've showed, like, you know, and if you're
I can spin the rock.
There's a definite strong possibility that there's some timey-wimey magic going on here.
For sure.
All right, we're about to get to the feedback, but first let's take a quick break. Okay, before we get into the feedback, which, by the way, marvel@baldmove.com is where you want to send feedback. Last week, alert Marvel historian Sean hipped us to the whole Nathaniel Richards, the thousand year in the future son or descendant of Rex or Reed Richards, leader of the Fantastic Four, Mr. Fantastic himself, hipped us to the Nathaniel Richards to Kang the Conqueror to Immortus Master of Time pipeline, that you'll go from kind of hero to villain to full circle, like guardian of the timeline. And there's one of the outreaches of that theory is that I guess actual comic plot is that one of the things that the Immortus guy is trying to do is keep a lid on the Avengers, because if the Avengers are left unchecked, they turn into some kind of like cosmic spanning oppressive force, or that they fuck up a lot more than they save if they're not properly monitored. I think that is eventually where Marvel's going to go, because they've got, you know, they've brought the Fantastic Four underneath their umbrella. The thing is like the first Fantastic Four MCU movie is set to go into production in 2023. And this shit feels like it's a lot more immediate. I wonder if the big bad behind the TVA is Loki himself. A version of Loki who's gone so power mad that he has become, as he observed in the last episode, the most powerful thing in the universe. Mm-hmm. And it's oppressive and it's bad. And there's a ragtag group of rebel Lokis trying to, you know, bring things back around. Like, we're going to meet a different variant of Loki, perhaps an older variant of Loki, because I just think that, like, I don't see how they get this Nathaniel Richards Kang Immortus thing to work without the Fantastic Four. And that's 2 years away. So, like, just like we talked about them taking the Enchantress story and slightly tweaking its origin to make her an actual variant of Loki. You could do, like, is it important to Kang's plot line? And I don't know, because this guy's kind of out of my wheelhouse. Is it important to his, like, core character arc that he be Reed Richards' son? Because if not, it could just be another Loki variant that's, like, become uber powerful and essentially winning everything. Because I guess there is some kind of Marvel lore that suggests Kang does try to set up a timeline that makes his rise inevitable, you know? So like I said, I wonder if it's going to be that, or it's going to be like some kind of like borrowed Loki thing, a Loki variant. It's going to have a Loki war going on here.
I mean, as somebody who is not steeped in the Marvel comic stuff, I would certainly find it more interesting if it was Loki fighting Loki. You know, what's going to turn your opinion of your glorious purpose faster than seeing that glorious purpose played out and it being hell? You know?
Yeah.
I think it could be super interesting to have Loki fighting Loki.
And there's tons of that stuff in the Marvel. Like, I remember, like, I do know a lot about the X-Men stuff, and there's this whole like Cable strife thing where, like, Cable is the son of Scott Summers and I think Madeline Pryor, that went, got infected with the techno virus and was sent into the future to cure it, but he becomes evil And there's a version of him that's good, which is Cable. And there's a version of him that's bad, that's Strife. And they come back in the present day to kind of duke it out. Like, you know, there's all kinds of this, like, self battling self when you see, like, how bad things get, you know?
Yeah.
That was a big plot of, like, Dark, right? And I, like I said, this guy that's the that's the showrunner here, that's the Rick and Morty alum, like, they love doing that shit. Like, we even saw this. It's funny because, like, now we're seeing Rick and Morty season 5 come out, and there was a couple elements of the latest episode, the premiere episode, that seemed to be ripped from Netflix's Dark. Yeah, I don't know why you couldn't have that, where, you know, someone is so horrified by your own end game after you've become a bitter, burnt out time, like, comes back to stop it. Yeah. Like, I think that's an interesting idea, and it's a lot. It's it doesn't require waiting 3 years for the three. Probably longer, because what the hell, you're going to introduce the son of Reed Richards in the first Fantastic Four movie? Or I guess you probably, maybe that's the thing, they're going to introduce the Fantastic Four, like, at the end of the Immortals, so, like, they're going to get their first feature film in 2023, but they'll right. It's kind of like Spider-Man was already a thing introduced in other, so they do have that ability, but I don't know. I like the low, like you said, it's inherently more interesting at this phase in MCU development for Loki to be the villain than the son of Reed Richards. But that's just me.
Yeah.
Did you see any other kind of, like, theories along, or that was interesting?
Okay. No, nothing I picked up on. But like I said, I don't have much time to research stuff before this episode.
Right on. All right, let's get on again. If you want to send us feedback, Marvel at baldmove.com is how you do it. First up, John from Boston says, I think the main theme of Fate and Loki is used in a similar way to the recent game, the Final Fantasy VII Remake. Now, I've never played Final Fantasy. Remake? I certainly haven't played the remake. I don't know if you know or if you're familiar, because, like, I'm just going to have to go with whatever this guy's saying, because I haven't played it. It sounds like you haven't played the remake either.
No, just the original and just half of it at that.
Okay. Oh, really? I didn't know you didn't finish it. Okay.
Yeah, I got John, like, the golden nugget part and kind of quit.
You found the golden nugget and you stopped there?
Well, yeah. Well, it turns out the golden nugget is a casino and it just drains you dry. So, yeah, I stopped.
So John says most of the remake follows the original 1997 masterpiece closely, but eventually bigger and bigger story divergences happen, each time being corrected by ghost-like manifestations of Fate. Hmm. Ultimately, this was all a metaphor for the rabid fandom of the game, who would not allow the creator to change his classic masterpiece because they're so tied to specific version of events. I fucking love when a creator takes shots at a fan, like, at a toxic element of their fan base like that. That's pretty fucking funny. In the end, he used the story itself to explain and represent how that needed to change and the variations needed to be accepted, meaning the remake instead of making it a remake in quotes rather than a remake. What do you think Loki is, or do you think Loki is making a similar point? It seems like Marvel is greatly expanding their multiverse, but also well aware that many fans might balk at something as simple as a female Loki, for example. The show's already filming when the game came out, so any similarity is probably just a shared angst at dealing with fan expectations, but it could be an interesting coincidence. I think there's definitely elements within the MCU creative team that probably have kind of a jaundiced eye towards some of how possessive the fans are of things like canon.
Oh, and yeah.
Versions of characters and which ones are the right ones and which ones are the wrong ones, and I could see that being frustrating to the extent that you do a 6-episode miniseries to address it. I don't know, but
that's the
if there's elements of that.
I feel like the healthiest way to deal with that is to say, okay, some people are going to be upset at us doing this, but creatively we think this is the correct decision, so we're doing it anyway. To you know, clap back at these people by producing hundreds of millions of dollars worth of television seems like a bit much.
Yeah.
But you do you, I guess. It could be,
yeah. But like, that's another Rick and Morty thing that they like to, in later seasons, like, challenge their fan base and, like, poke fun at them demanding continuity, or the you know, the fact that there's not just one fan base. Some fan base likes the continuity and the evil Morty shit. Some people like the just crazy interdimensional Cable, Justin Roiland being crazy person stuff. But it's never like a whole episode about it. It's always kind of like just like little tiny, like, you know, meta bits. So I don't know. We'll see. But it's an interesting theory, John.
It's got to be pretty annoying for creatives, though, I will say, to have people have expectations that they, not of like quality expectations, but like specific things that they have to do in order to meet their expectations and make this quote unquote as good as it can be. That's got to be infuriating when you're a creative type.
Especially when you're adapting something as big as the Marvel Universe, like, you know, there's a bunch of different and nonsensical canon versions.
At a lot of points, right? I'm sure everything in the Marvel Universe doesn't make sense on paper.
Right. Oh, yeah. Like, if you want to do a movie about Wolverine's origin, pick which of the dozen versions that are mutually incompatible.
Right.
You know, and like, but it's one's going to be someone's fucking favorite and it's going to really piss off, like, you know, if people that like, and so it's like, it's kind of a thankless task and you got to kind of do it. And there's always going to be people that are cranky about it one way or another, but it's like Peter Jackson, you know, like there's some people that fucking can't stand the Lord of the Rings, but they're in a vast minority.
Yeah.
You know, so. Ryan from Kansas City said, one thing I hope they reference in this show is that Captain America put the Infinity Stones back, but that he did also try to bring back a Tony Stark from before the Thanos fight to after the Thanos fight, but was stopped by the TVA. They set up the changing your past doesn't change your future, and the Thanos they beat up was from pre-snap that didn't stop the snap from happening. The fact that they didn't try to do this with Tony so that his daughter Morgan could grow up with their dad is mind-boggling to me. I'm fine with him being dead, but the fact that they didn't even try is a loophole to me. So this also could be the same said for Black Widow. They probably can't get Chris Evans to do the scene somewhere, so just explain it with dialogue is all I can hope for. Maybe Mobius is the one that stopped him, and this could be the reasons for the FDR pin. He wouldn't let him bring Tony back, but would let him stay in the past with Peggy. Although maybe that was part of the Timekeeper's timeline all along.
And he's had his mind wiped since then. He's been reset. Now that we know these are reset agents. Yeah.
And I don't think Chris Evans is anti-Marvel. I think Chris Evans is, you know, doesn't want to be doing Captain America shit all the time.
It's Harrison
but
Ford,
I think
right?
he would come. I think he would. Yeah, I think he would come back for a green screen, you know, after credit scene. Abso-fucking-lutely. Robert Downey Jr. same way if they could figure out a way to do it. Not like pissed about the whole situation like some of the Star Wars, like if you try to get Daisy Ridley back for something or John Boyega, they might just be like, you know what, go fuck yourself. But like I don't think any of the core MCU people feel that way about it, so I think I don't know. I do think that there is something that they're going to do. They're setting up here with Captain America and the TVA, and it's complicated by the fact that we know, well, I think we're going to understand, I'm just going with the fan canon as straight now, but I think we're going to stand the TVA is evil. So like, does that change how we feel about Captain America? But I don't know. Cause Captain America also served Hydra unwittingly for several years when they took over SHIELD. So like he can fall for the good guy act, from a bad guy. So this would clean up some of those. I never had any problem with that because I guess I just didn't think about it that deeply. But it's like, yeah, why you're going back and fixing things? Why not bring? But that shit does also feel like, because like I guess to do it the same way you do the Infinity Stones, you'd have to return Tony to his proper timeline. What does that look like? Like you take Tony from just before the and you bring him back so he can raise his daughter, and then you get him back. When she's like, when's the appropriate time to rip Tony from her father and return him to his timeline? And he's going to be visibly older. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if Marvel thinks that they have a problem there the way you do, but also I'm super on board with them addressing things like why he wouldn't try to bring his friends back, and having the timekeepers be the ultimate kind of no that he can't.
Yeah.
All right, Sean. Returns this week. Hey guys, last week Aaron was mentioning that he noticed scenes filmed in the volume and found them to be a bit distracting. I didn't notice it much last week, but I thought it was extremely noticeable this week and was curious about your take on it. I thought the exposition scenes of Loki and Sylvie walking and talking really betrayed the limits of the volume. You could make out the seam between the floor and the walls of the dome fairly consistently in those scenes, and it really forced a weird rhythm to the cuts as they could only continuously film them while walking the length of the room. Also, the end episode or end scene of the episode that had them running up to the wall of the volume so it could display a falling building or collapsing debris. Again, very noticeable. It feels like the Mandalorian team does a better job of utilizing it, making it more seamless. I hope they fine tune it a bit more. It'd be really distracting to have that effect turn up in the movies as well. Do you guys have any thoughts on the reliance of this new technology? I wonder if depending on it as a consequence of the ambitious schedule of the content they're set to produce. I guess I wonder if depending on it is a consequence of their ambitious schedule. I know we've talked about this, but like, I think there's an element of, again, like Lord of the Rings, even though that was taking place in late 90s and early 2000s, with very small exceptions, that shit still really holds up today, 20 years later. Mm-hmm. It's kind of amazing, right? But you had guys, brilliant people, purposely building technologies and stuff to directly do a solve a problem. Got to have a massive armies and they can't look like they're all like doing the same animation. So we need some kind of AI that's going to randomize it and it needs to be able to control 10,000 people. Mm-hmm. Done. You know, you take that technology and you give it to some other thing that saw the Lord of the Rings and wants to do that. And they are not the people that worked on it. And they don't understand its limitations. And hey, you know, this really works best if you film it at night and it's dark and it's raining. And they try to do a bright, sunny scene and it just doesn't work as well. I think that might be you've got this like this showrunner. Goddamn, I've already forgot his name. The guy from Rick and Morty. I think he's a really talented guy and he's a really smart guy and he's got a lot of good. But like you are flipping him the key to a $1 billion car here. And is he going to be able to drive it as well as, you know, someone that like conceived the technology because it needed to scratch a certain itch? And you know, it's like, hey, this actually works super well for aircraft hangars and scums of hive and villainy. They're indoor kind of dark areas that have hulking machinery that you can kind of have three dimensionally poking out into the real world and kind of hide these seams. And you got to make sure you film. Or is he just like, hey, I can do this thing. And, you know, nobody's tried it before. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if it's the tech or if it's just the fact that like this is the first time they're using it in these ways and it just didn't quite work. And they did, you know, like they didn't know it wouldn't. And there's no time to like spend another $10 million to fix it. So it's just going to look a little rough.
Yeah. And the setting they're using it in within the story is also pretty severe. Like it felt oppressive to me, the lighting in this episode. But I think that's just a consequence of the planet coming to crash into the moon. Like I think it was maybe intentionally meant to feel that way. Mm-hmm. It's just it created an atmosphere where I was like noticing the lighting almost more than anything that was happening on the screen. And it's mm-hmm. not because I was consciously thinking of the volume necessarily, but just you know it gives you a feeling when there are visuals on the screen that feel this washed over everything. And yeah, if that's what you're going for and it, you know, it creates an atmosphere. So you better know how you're using that. And maybe they intentionally did that to make me feel oppressed in this, make me feel like doom was coming. And if so, it worked. If not,
I could see that
maybe need to, you know, fix how they're using it.
Yeah. Like, I mean, if you're from the Midwest, you probably know what I'm about to describe. But like before and sometimes after like a severe thunderstorm or especially a tornado, mm-hmm. I shit you not, the light is green.
Yeah. Whole sky is green.
And if you tried to replicate that on a camera on a Hollywood soundstage, I'm almost guarantee you it would look wrong because it is wrong. It's like that's when you see that shit, it's like you either went through some shit or you're about to go through some shit. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if they're trying like because I noticed that, too. The light was a little weird, but it's like what does, you know, the reflected light from a moon entering an atmosphere and causing like what the shit does that actually look like? And the world's alien and it's like black sand and purple mesas. And but yeah, it did look wrong. And I don't know how much of that is, like you said, the volume and how much of that was them going for an apocalyptic vibe. And but it was noticeable and I thought distracting. Mm-hmm. But I've noticed that stuff. Like I thought that they were doing this on The Expanse last year. It wasn't the volume, but it's essentially the same kind of thing. I think that ultimately this is going to be huge because it's going to let people do like really impressive sci-fi type sets for like really cheap, but you know, for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, more like, convincingly, right? Because you could do all this stuff, yes. But getting those reflections, getting the small details takes a lot of time and money.
Get it to not look washed out when it's like a projection instead of like something that's actually emitting light. Yeah, I think there's definitely things they can do, and it'll get there. It'll get mm-hmm. there. But this is like, you know, this shit was just really created 2 years ago. And it's clearly set the filmmakers' kind of minds on fire with what they can do about it. And, you know, it might need some tweaking here and there. But that's all the feedback we got this week. Again, if you'd like to send us more, you can do so at marvel@baldmove.com. Send it into that email and we will consider it for the show. Thanks to everyone that did so. Appreciate everyone listening to the podcast. I am expecting some fireworks, and so not just the one shooting from Loki's fingertips next episode. It should be a full-on clusterfuck of illusions and enchanting and the TVA getting their head out of their asses and figuring what's going on. It should be, and we're halfway done, man.
I know. Like in a downhill. That's the thing. I'm getting a little antsy because there's so little time left in this show.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, we will be here tomorrow, the next week rather, for either the thrilling conclusion of what seems like a two-parter episode or the letdown of the century. We'll see.
God, I hope not.
We'll see. Loki season four or season
this
one.
This was
going to
be the one, man.
Week.
This was going to be the Marvel show that I'm finally like, yeah, okay, cool.
You were supposed to be the chosen one that got Jim reinvested in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, not destroy his interest.
It's true.
We'll see if Loki has the high ground.
The volume is rough, it's coarse, and it gets everywhere.
We'll see if they have the high ground or if we can just see that they're standing on a green screen block and I can see the seam in the volume next week. We'll see you guys then. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.